listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.
You are all about to get on this record. Getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces that you're going to get from one man right here on The Big Puzzle with your host, the one and only man from Canada, Mr. Barry Ritz.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. As I always say, folks, we are viewer-supported stations, so if you like what these people are doing, a lot of work goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about, and if you can throw a few dollars into the kitties, I know they would much appreciate it. It's my pleasure to have back on the show Dr. David Allen today. I was just looking, like I said, to the doctor before the show started. I was looking at the archives, and I haven't had a chance to talk with you for about 14 months, Doc, so welcome back to the show. And instead of me trying to tell people about your past, I'll let you do a brief history on yourself. And like I said before the show, Doc, I do want to touch on developments in the world of cannabis and medical cannabis, but I think we'll spend a good part of our show here going forward talking about this scandemic that's going on in our society. Welcome back to the show, sir.
How's it going?
I'm having a great day, except for I'm really, Doc, I'm being quite honest with you, I'm having a really hard time dealing with the level of, how do I call it, zombieism in my society. I'm being quite honest, I'm having a hard time being patient with people now in light of what information is coming forward, if people would just take a little bit of time and look what's going on. But it's, unfortunately, we seem to be in a world where people don't have time to do that, Doc. But I don't want to get into that right out of the way. I kind of want to talk about your past and cannabis a little bit, because you know what? With all this crap going on, Doc, when I start talking about cannabis, it really lifts my heart up. Okay, so right. It's a positive in our world.
Well, Barry, thank you for having me on your show. For those who don't know me, I'm Dr. David Allen. I'm a retired heart surgeon and member of the International Cannabinoid Research Society, the ICRS. And so I consider myself a cannabis scientist of sorts. I've written a bunch of articles about cannabis, and I know quite a bit about this subject. And this is a new science that was kind of discovered about 30 years ago of the endocannabinoid signaling system, the ECS. And we didn't really know what it was when we first discovered it. And over time, a bunch of stuff has unraveled. And it seems like this ECS is a master control system that controls all physiology in man and animals. And it has to do with these little antennae that are on every cell. They're little proteins that go through the cell wall, and they're shaped in a funny shape, and they act like a key in a lock when certain chemicals float by these little antennae. If the right chemical is available, it attaches to the antenna and it causes stuff to happen inside the cell, physiologic changes. So people are kind of familiar with insulin floating around in the blood system and binding onto insulin receptors or insulin antennas, and that causes glucose to go into the cell. Well, cells have multiple different types of antennas, But the most prolific antennas that they have, the most prolific receptors are cannabinoid receptors. And there's maybe as much as five different cannabinoid receptors, but two are really well-known, the CB1 and CB2 receptor. And they have different functions. And it seems like the CB1 receptor is responsible for burning glucose, and the CB2 receptor is responsible for burning fats. And by choosing which one you burn, you produce different amounts of exhaust, which is oxygen-free radicals. So when you burn sugar or fats, you produce a bunch of adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. And the ATP molecule is the energy molecule of the cell, and the cell uses it for everything, to energize the cell. And it produces an exhaust of oxygen-free radicals. When you burn sugar, you actually produce more oxygen-free radicals more rapidly. And so burning sugar is inflammatory. But when you burn fat, it produces less oxygen-free radicals. So that seems to be anti-inflammatory. And by controlling whether you're burning sugar or fat, you can control the rate of cell division or cell differentiation. So cell division would be if you have a rapidly dividing cell line like a cancer, you can slow or stop its development by stopping sugar burning. And stem cells, when they differentiate into different tissues, so stem cells is a pluripotential cell, they call it, which means that it can divide and develop into any cell line. So it could be a cartilage cell or a blood vessel cell or a brain cell or a muscle cell. And as the cell line develops, then it loses its chance to differentiate into different tissues. So everybody has stem cells in their brain and their heart, and we think that you can stimulate stem cell production by going on a glucose-free diet or minimal glucose diet and stimulating CB2 receptors. So the future of a lot of medicine is going to be CB2 stimulation and a ketogenic diet. And they've proven that this actually decreases heart scar in heart attacks, and it also decreases liver scar in diseases that affect the liver. So this is going to be a new area of therapeutic application by cannabinoids. Now, as far as recent developments, there's something that happened out of Israel that's really a super development, but even the people in Israel didn't really fully delineate why it's such a great discovery. And the problem is this. Cannabinoids are all oily substances. So when you extract the cannabinoids from the plant, it's an oily substance, and everybody knows that oil doesn't mix with water, and therefore cannabinoids can't be injected into the blood, the veins, because the oil doesn't mix with water, and it would just clog off the arteries and veins and stuff and cause trouble. So you can't really inject cannabis oil into patients. Well, the people in Israel have been able to make esters out of cannabidiol. And so what that means is making a CBD ester means that you could put it in solution and inject it IV. They were just talking about using cannabinoids as esters. And they didn't even mention that it made it water-soluble, but I happen to know for a fact that that's why they're doing it. So that opens up a whole new area where doctors and ER people will be able to inject CBD in people that are having strokes and heart attacks and other illnesses and stop a lot of diseases, especially reperfusion injury in either a heart attack or a stroke.
So, well, you know, it seems like the realm of capabilities of this plant are almost endless. You know, Rick said to me one time, he says, you know, this plant can heal up to 200 disorders in the human body that we know about now. And now we see a lot more. Now we see a lot more research being done into it, Doc, and it is really starting to open people's minds. I just had a lady here in Prince Rupert, British Columbia, who had prostate cancer, and she treated it with a really good high grade oil in a suppository, and in 6 weeks, Doc, it was gone, totally, and she's now cancer free. I hear about these things going on all around me, and I try and share that information with people. I do.
Well,
go ahead.
We should have double-blind studies that prove the either efficacy or lack of efficacy of all the cannabinoids. And it's a crazy thing to think about that because cannabis is made a Schedule I, that means that all doctors can't touch it. They can't prescribe it, and so they can't do studies on it. And so, by making it Schedule I, they prevented the scientific study of this plant that seems to be maybe we could save their grandmother's life.
Yep.
If people could study this, but these people that are inhibiting the study, they don't know that they're actually hurting people in their own family by their ignorance of this science. And it's a complex science involving stereo anatomy of molecules. And so this is like more complex than rocket science in a way, in many ways.
Right. Now, you told me once that you've been studying this for how many years now, Doctor, and you still don't fully understand how it works in your body. I think you made that statement to me one time.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, the thing is that we don't have to know exactly how it works. The thing is that we do know now that it does work. And right. The more studies that are being done, I see all kinds of really cool things coming forward as more and more people are starting to understand what this thing can do for the human body. In my opinion, Doc, I'll say this real quick. In my opinion, at one point in the future here, I think that we should be able to hold these people to full account for the lives that they've taken out of our society, for the diseases that could have been cured but weren't cured because of the holdback on this information. I hope that we do. I hope we get, because that would bring a justice in our society for all the injustices that have been done to us. Go ahead.
But all these people are going to say, well, I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know that I was hurting my own family by inhibiting the science. I was just trying to enforce the law. So it's – and I agree with you. So I've made this statement several times. There's a war on drugs. It's a war on drugs and what they're doing is they're arresting people and killing people in the drug bust and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's in any war, there's got to be right and wrong, ethical ways of conducting the war and unethical ways of conducting a war and war crimes. And truly, if people are inhibiting the science of cannabinoids just so that they can make money by locking people up, that truly is a war crime.
So
you're right. Many of these people are absolutely guilty of war crimes. I will be shocked if anybody is ever prosecuted. One of my life goals is to piss on Harry Anslinger's grave. I would like to do that someday. Mm. Because he was one of the culprits that started this war, and it was all a racist war, and it was to protect big business, the paper companies. It was to protect the pharmaceutical companies, and the truth is going to come out no matter how hard they try to hide it, no matter how many billions of dollars they spend on the drug war. The truth of the endocannabinoid signaling system is going to come to light because it's the truth. And so they're going to have to realize at some point that they were wrong in inhibiting the science. And this is the only science that you can think of that's ever been inhibited in this way.
Well, they don't want it out there, Doc.
There's no other science that you can think of, nuclear science, dangerous chemicals, explosives, nothing that you can think of has been inhibited except for this science. So
that's got a lot of that must raise questions in people's minds, Doc, why they're trying to keep this back. Well, you know, and I know why, is because it's the biggest threat to big pharma that exists out there, that if we fully embrace this, and, you know, we've only touched the surface, Doc, let's just think about this for 10 seconds. If we spent a third of the money that we spend building weapons to kill ourselves, if we spent a third of that money on cannabis research, and we got the top doctors in the world working on this, the sky's the limit. It would absolutely turn our world upside down. And I hope that we see that day, Doctor, because holding this back from the public, to me, is a crime. And we're only talking about the medicinal. We could talk about the industrial use of this plant, and we could get into the exact same conversation. Why has it been held back from us when it could absolutely cleanse our planet right now from the inside out? And, somebody said, you know, Rick Simpson said to me early in my life, Doc, he said, you know, this plant can literally clean the planet from the inside out. All the toxins in our soil, everything that's happening negative to our environment right now on this planet could be turned around. And I laughed, but I'm not laughing anymore because never was a truer thing said to me. Go ahead.
Right. Well, Jack Harris started telling Normal that cannabis would save the world. And Normal distanced themselves from Jack Harris, that they thought he was just a crazy man, and later had to admit that it's probably true that if any plant had a chance to save the world, it would be the cannabis plant. And God put this plant on the earth.
Absolutely.
And it's wrong. If you look in the Bible, the first page of the Bible, Genesis 1:29 says, and God said, I have made all plants bearing seed for you to eat. And in Romans 14:2, it says, some may eat all things, others who are weak eat herbs. And Romans 14:3 says, let those that eat herbs not despise those that don't. And let those that don't eat herbs, that do eat herbs, or, I'm sorry, let those that don't eat herbs not do eat herbs, not despise those that don't. And let those that don't eat herbs not judge those that do.
Exactly.
So in God's Bible, it says man should not be judging other people for using herbs.
Absolutely. Amen, Doc.
So, you so took God gave this plant to everyone else. God gave this plant to us, and it's here for us to use. And apparently, according to U.S. Patent 6,630,507, cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants that came out in 2003. It's an NIH patent. It means it's a U.S. government patent. Proves in the patent, because the patent office is the guardian of the truth. You can't submit a patent to the patent office.
Hey, Barry.
And have any lies in the patent.
Hang on. Steve.
What's that?
So, Steve, was just hang on for a sec. Let him finish his conversation here.
You're drowning him out. You're drowning him out with all that noise. I say you're drowning him out with all that noise you're making.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Thank you, Steve.
So, cannabinoids is antioxidants and neuroprotectants. Proves that if you give CBD to lab animals, and cause a stroke in the lab animals, that the lab animals that got CBD, that their strokes were 50% smaller. And your doctor can't give you anything that does this. There's other studies that show that if you smoke cannabis, which is not the best way to use it, for 20 years or more, that the incidence of diabetes is 66% less. No other studies have been done like this. Other studies will be done, especially eating cannabis. I believe that eating cannabis may be even more protective for diabetes than the 66%, and actually may be a cure for diabetes. Now, think of all the money that possibility would endanger, because there's people making zillions of dollars on treating diabetes and diabetic retinopathy and diabetic nephropathy and amputations and all the other crazy stuff. We would destroy the diabetic industry by legalizing cannabis.
Wow. Well, you know what? I have a tub of it sitting in my freezer, Doc, and every day when I have a salad, I take about 6 leaves out and I throw it in my salad, because I became aware of the benefits of eating cannabis about 3 years ago. We can even take that one step farther, and we could be feeding our animals, all our animals.
Right.
For all hemp.
Animals, and of course, have hemp. Yeah.
I know. At one time, yeah, I was just going to get to that, Doc. At one time, that's what we were feeding our animals. And boy, what a perfect situation for ingesting our food that's loaded with CBDs and seeds. It's a no brainer. And now we need to get back to that, because our food is becoming so toxic. Go ahead.
There was a U.S. patent for feeding cows hemp and getting the milk and the meat with CBD in it. There's a U.S. patent for that.
I didn't know that. But that, to me, that would be a no-brainer. And if we could get society to get back to that, we would create all kinds of new industries. You know, the industries that would be created when we start embracing industrial hemp and doing what we're talking about here. And, you know, I get a lot of people say, well, you know, you're going to destroy a lot of industries by doing what you're talking about. But no, because every industry that will die, a new one will rise up to fill a void of what we're talking about here. It's a revolution in the way we do things. Go ahead.
Now, an important concept that many people don't know is, and the government doesn't want you to know this, is that if you eat raw hemp or raw marijuana, even strong marijuana, if you eat raw marijuana that's not been heated in a cookie or a brownie or not been smoked, it doesn't get you high.
At all.
And the reason, the reason for that, it does give you a little bit of a feeling, but it's not a high, and it's not like smoking a joint, okay? And the reason is because the plant doesn't make THC. The plant makes tetrahydrocannabinolic acid, THCA, and that molecule doesn't bind onto the CB1 receptor. When you heat it in a cookie or a brownie or smoke it, what happens is that there's a CO2 molecule attached to the THC. When the CO2 evaporates off of the THC, they call it decarboxylation because it's a carboxyl group. And the carboxyl group is acid. So you change an acid molecule, THC acid, to THC, which is the base form. And that molecule binds on to the CB1 receptor and will get you high. But eating raw, uncooked, unheated marijuana or hemp does not get you high and provides great medicinal effects. So the future of marijuana and hemp is to be in our diet. And in Mississippi, they're trying to legalize cannabis and a few backwards places like this. And they're trying to make laws where they can legalize hemp, but you can't eat it. Now, why would they want to legalize hemp and make it illegal for you to eat it? It doesn't make sense, does it? Because it doesn't get you high, so why would they make it illegal for you to eat it?
Well, it's very nefarious reasons, of course, Doctor, because big pharmacy's got to make their money, man. They just can't have any of this coming forward. So there's your answer, of course. Somebody's pocket's being locked. Somebody's pocket's being locked.
Right. A friend of mine, David Singletary, who ran for governor here in Mississippi to legalize cannabis, him and I recently drove to a hemp farm in Louisiana. And it was about an acre farm, I guess. And the plants were kind of planted like marijuana in the ground about, you know, 6 foot apart. And they were all about 3 foot tall and had buds and stuff on them. And I was asking the people where they get their seeds or clones and stuff, and they have to buy it from once a government source. So they can't just grow any kind of marijuana or hemp seed. They have to grow government controlled hemp clones or seeds. And they have a bunch of shops down here in Mississippi. It's CBD is legal. And you can go in some of these shops, and they have 10, 15 jars full of a pot or hemp, and it looks just like the stores in California, but it's all CBD, and they have different strains of all this CBD pot, and they're selling it for $40 a quarter.
$40 a quarter. What's the street price down there for a quarter ounce stock?
I don't know, because I'm in Mississippi and I don't buy marijuana in Mississippi because it's illegal here and they'll throw you in jail.
Really? Wow. Well, I didn't know that, okay? Well, I'm not coming to Mississippi then, Doc. I'll tell you. Well, that's off my list of places to go.
It's going
to
change here someday. It's going to be, they can't fight this. This is the truth. They can't fight the truth. So
I absolutely agree. Well, you know, I hope that day comes really soon, Doc, because there's people in our world right now that are suffering that don't need to be suffering. And to me, that's a tragedy in our society. The power of big farming, the control they have over government, we got to bring that whole paradigm down. I got a book here, Doc, and I tell people about this. I tell them there's a book I got. It's called The Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. And I talk about it a lot on my shows because every time I feel something going wrong in my body, I refer to this book. I use the herbs they talk about, and bingo. It works every time. I'm going to share one real quick story with you, Doc, that'll blow your mind, okay? Sure. You're a doctor. Okay. I was picking morel mushrooms last year in the bush, and I had a bad slip on a hill, and I completely tore the ace. Morels. In the forest fires, you know, every year the morel mushroom comes. But I was on a hill anyways, Doc, and I slipped, and I completely blew my knee out. It came down on my leg. All my weight came down on my leg. I completely tore the ACL in half. And I almost tore one ligament in half, and the other one I had a partial tear in it. I had an MRI done at the hospital, and they told me that the only way this will ever be healed, Mr. Prince, is with surgery. Absolutely. I went and saw the surgeon in Paris here. He said, absolutely, it cannot be healed. I went to my book, Doc, and I read about it. And the book told me to wrap my knee with stained nettle, which is a ginseng, and another herb called comfrey. You can Google these on the internet, guys, and I talk about this because I'm living proof. I got the MRIs to back up what I'm telling you, but I wrapped my knee for 6 weeks with that, Doc, and I had another MRI done on my knee, and my knee completely healed, no tears, nothing wrong with my knee, and I went and played hockey all winter on a knee that I was told there's no way I'm going to play hockey last year, Doc. True story, and I got the MRIs to show it. It's called stinging nettle and comfrey. It's spelled C-O-M-F-R-Y, I believe, or I-E. But these are herbs that grow right in my bush. The native Indians up here, Doc, for thousands of years have been using stinging nettle to heal their broken bones and torn muscles. They gave it a nickname called Nitbone. And if you look in the history of the natives up here in the north, they used this for thousands of years to fix their body because it worked. Sure, a broken bone wouldn't heal like it would today where the doctor can reset it with x-rays and blah, 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 but it would heal their bodies. And they used it. I used it on my knee, Doc. And you know what? I played hard hockey all winter on my knee at 65 years old. I got two MRIs I'd love to show you, the first one and the second one. The greatest thing about it, Doc, is I was playing hockey with a young doctor this year, and I showed him the MRIs. And you know what? His mouth, his jaw, I can still remember his jaw. He looked at it for a couple minutes and looked at me, and
It was priceless. Go ahead. I have to share that with you.
Okay.
So I'm a believer, total believer in naturals. Go ahead.
Well, the problem with a lot of naturals is there's not a lot of double-blind studies. And so a lot of this goes on people's word. They say, oh, we'll take this herb, it cures, blah, blah, blah. And they never tell you, well, how do you know that? How do you know it cures? And they can't really... And then there's this issue of terpenes, too. So terpenes in cannabis are part of the plant, and each plant has a different terpene profile. And the labs that study the cannabis, they have to have pure lab samples of different things so they can, when they run it through a spectrograph, they can say by the shape of the curve that they produce, well, this is limonene, or this is myrcene, or whatever terpene they're talking about. So the labs have to have 100% pure samples of these different terpenes so they can zero their lab equipment, so whenever they test something, they can say, well, this graph looks just like the graph that says myrcene, so therefore this plant has 2% myrcene in it. So what I'm getting at is this. These different terpenes are all kinds of different chemicals, and there's all kinds of different extraction methods. Some of them are extracted from burning smoke and from burning pine trees and things, and they all have different purities, and some of them are fairly cheap. Limonene is like $35-$45 a gallon, okay? It's used for cleaning products and stuff, and it smells pretty. And all terpenes are classified legally as substances generally recognized as safe. That's a legal term, substances generally recognized as safe. And what that means is you can take some limonene and put it in a cookie or whatever, and you can eat so much of this and it won't kill you. But no one has done any studies on whether any of these terpenes can be breathed in your lungs and not cause long-term troubles with your lungs. And no one is going to pay for those studies because there's no proven medicinal value. There is some medicinal values of the terpenes, but there's no double-blind studies, and so nobody is going to pay to see how much limonene that you can inhale before you get complications. So there's a lot of people like Ed Rosenthal. I call him a terpene cowboy because Ed knows a lot about terpenes, but he knows zero about human pulmonary pathophysiology. And so I got into an argument with him a couple of times about terpenes because no one knows the mortality, morbidity of inhalation of these things. And Ed was trying to say, well, they spray these terpenes in hotels as if that was a proof that they're safe.
Yeah.
You know, and so... there's a lot of these people that are taking cannabis products, and they'll take a swag and extract it, and they say, well, this doesn't taste that good. Now, they'll add this and that terpene to it, and the terpenes are cheap, so they dilute the cannabis oil, and you smell it, and it smells real pretty. It's like vanilla or strawberry or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
No one knows if you can breathe strawberry in or lemon or whatever and not cause long-term pulmonary dysfunction.
That doesn't really surprise me, Doc. I know today you wanted to talk about calamine, and we also wanted to touch on SARS or COVID-19 for a few minutes, but let's talk about, you were talking to me yesterday about calamine and what they're doing with that right now. Anyways, I'd like you to bring that to public attention.
The ketamine subject is a little bit off of what we're talking about now, but the ketamine subject is a real super important social problem that people are completely unaware of. And I don't think you'll hear this story anywhere else, but Dr. Allen is the only person talking about this. And ketamine is an anesthetic, and it's what's called a psychodysleptic. And what you do, what it does is it actually disconnects your brain from your muscles. And if you give enough of it, it also disconnects your brain from your diaphragm muscle. And so a lot of people that get ketamine have to be intubated and ventilated. And usually the only people that can use ketamine are anesthesiologists, because they have the ability to intubate and ventilate. And at least 50%, in many studies, at least 50% of people who get ketamine require intubation and ventilation. So it's a pretty dangerous drug. So no doctor, no medicine doctor, no surgeon, no heart surgeon can actually use ketamine, only anesthesiologists. So what's happening is the police have found out that if you give ketamine to somebody, it knocks them out immediately. So for any combative person, you give them ketamine, and 2 minutes later, they're on the ground and can't move. And so there's apparently a lot of this being done in Minnesota, but apparently in Colorado, there was a case last year, a guy named Elijah McClain. You may want to look that up. It's a really interesting story. Elijah McClain was walking home from the store, and the police caught him and tried to stop him, and they ended up wrestling him to the ground, and they chokehold him and knocked him out twice while his handcuffs were on. And then in one audio that I heard on YouTube, it clearly states one police officer is telling, well, as soon as EMS gets here, we're going to give them ketamine. So everybody knows that once police are on any scene, they're in charge of that scene. No one else is in charge of that scene. And if EMS comes up there and police tell EMS to inject ketamine, they got pretty much have to inject ketamine. And actually, they found out that the EMS people are actually making some money on injecting ketamine. So they're kind of encouraging people to use ketamine. The problem is this. The FDA approves drugs to be used for certain conditions. So when you make a drug, you make application to the FDA, and you give them safety studies that you've done, and then you do human studies, and then you apply it for, well, we're going to use it for this dose at this interval, and if you use it at this dose and this interval, and it's safe for these three conditions. And so the FDA looks at this stuff and they say, well, all right, well, I agree with you. We're going to approve this drug for these three conditions under this particular dose. And that's what's called indicated uses of an FDA-approved drug. Well, doctors can use any drug that's FDA-approved in manners that weren't initially tested for. So you can give higher doses of an approved drug, and that's considered off-label or unauthorized or inappropriate use of the drug. Not maybe not inappropriate, but it's not tested. So it's called off-label use. And so to do an off-label use, a doctor has to tell the patient, well, I'm going to use this drug off-label. I'm going to give you a higher dose, or I'm going to give you a different dose. And the physician has to do a thorough history, including a drug history and alcohol history, and he has to do a tailored good faith exam. And that's an ethereal term that means you have to do a physical exam tailored to the disease that you're talking about treating. So And ethically, the doctor should get an informed consent from the patient. We're going to use this drug in a slightly experimental reason. And we're going to use this dose. And then this is not FDA approved. And we're informing you this so that you have full informed consent. So what's happening is police have discovered this drug, and they've been able to coerce EMS people to inject this drug, and on people that they have no idea what their drug history is, whether they just had a bunch of alcohol or other drugs. They don't know anything about their physical history, and they're just giving people drugs in an experimental way without their consent, and apparently Elijah McClain got this drug, and he couldn't breathe because his diaphragm was paralyzed, and they didn't know enough to monitor him and intubate him if his oxygen dropped, and he died on the way to the hospital. And so this is murder. This is chemical warfare by the police state.
Wow. I'm sitting here taking this all in right now, and I'm really having a hard time believing this, but in the same mouthful, not really, Doc, because we see instances going on in multiple levels in our society right now that we're being treated like guinea pigs. We could talk about all kinds of different aspects where we're being treated like guinea pigs, and you just hit on a good one. I hope this comes forward. I hope the public is really made aware of it. And if you're the only one talking about it right now, Doc, I got to applaud you for that. Go ahead.
Well, I talked to the ER doc that was covering the EMS people in Colorado, and he told me that last year, 2019, that he wasn't exactly sure, but it was somewhere over 650 injections in 2019 by EMS. Now, just think about that. That's almost two a day. And why would they need to inject a medicine on people they don't know their history 650 times in 1 year?
How are they getting away with this? This is like something out of Orwell. Go ahead.
The way they do this is they get together, and so the people that own the EMS companies, they get together with the doctors, and they get a bunch of really smart doctors and really smart businessmen together, and they say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Since we already covered EMS people by the doctor's license, what we'll do is we'll allow them to inject ketamine under our supervision, and we'll make an excuse for the standard care, the standard of care. So they'll make where they excuse the standard of care for the EMS people. But the truth is, this is a federal drug law. And so a bunch of real smart people can't come together and say, you know, I guess we're going to forget about this federal drug law of off-label use of federally approved drugs, and we're going to allow our EMS people to inject random people on the street ketamine. So this is a slippery slope. The next thing they'll be doing is they'll have knockout gas at riots, and they'll be gassing people. Well, we did this for safety. We're knocking them out for safety.
It's always for safety, Doc. Always. We got to talk. We got to talk about COVID-19. I want your thoughts on exactly what's going on here in the last 6 months. Okay.
All right. Well, I wrote an article about 6 years ago about how CBD in the treatment of Ebola. And Governor Gary Johnson mentioned it on TV. And the people that hated pot absolutely hated it. And the people that loved pot absolutely loved it. And the article is based on a bunch of scientific articles that prove that CBD stops cytokine storm and septic shock. And that's the mechanism that Ebola kills people. But that's also the mechanism that COVID-19 is killing people. So there's several people doing research now in Israel and in Canada, and I think in University of Omaha, the University of Nebraska in Omaha, that they're doing studies on different strains of cannabis on COVID-19. And what happens is, here's what happens is, any virus enters the cell by what's called pinocytosis, so it comes into the cell cytoplasm, and it controls the DNA and RNA and is able to inject itself into your RNA and replicate more viruses by hijacking your own DNA and RNA. Okay? And so what happens is the virus hijacks your DNA, you start producing a bunch of viral particles. The viral particles build up to such an extent until the cell bursts and it releases all these viral particles, okay? Once that happens is, if your cells have previously been exposed to a virus like this, they will have developed antibodies. If they haven't, then they won't. So the first infection may not result in a very big antibody response. But any subsequent secondary infections, what happens is if you've already got a bunch of antibodies built up against this particular virus, once the virus spreads out like that again, it causes these antibodies to attack the virus, and it causes the white cells to rupture and release all their enzymatic, all their enzymes into the surrounding cytoplasm, or into the surrounding cellular structure. And that causes other white cells to do the same thing. So one white cell busts open, and it releases these enzymes. And the enzymes are made to eat up the protein of the virus. So it kills the virus by chewing the proteins up. But once that happens, it causes another white cell to bust, and that white cell, the contents, causes millions of other white cells in the surrounding area to do the same thing. And so it's like a nuclear explosion. One cell explodes, causes multiple other cells to explode, and then you get a massive release of this enzymes, and these enzymes cause what's called a cytokine storm. So all these cytokines that are released by the white cells kill the virus locally, but they also have effects on the tissues elsewhere. And it causes a sequence of events called disseminated intravascular coagulation, or DIC, and septic shock. And so CBD stops septic shock and stops cytokine storm. And so there's a lot of studying being done right now to see if CBD is protective in Ebola. And I would be surprised if it wasn't.
So that's right now,
story, and I'm sticking to it.
Hey, well, look at Doc. You know, I don't get a chance very often to get a doctor on the show, and I appreciate the information you're sharing with us today. But really, what are your thoughts about what's going forward with this?
I'm calling it, of course, a scamdemic, because to me that's what it is. Going forward with this COVID-19 virus, that's the most dangerous thing that's ever hit the planet Earth. You know, I've been studying. I'm going to share a few thoughts with you here about it, Doc. Is, you know, I've looked at the numbers in Canada, and I've looked at the amount of people that were killed in 2018 and 2019 by the common influenza strain in Canada. And if you look at those numbers and the COVID-19 numbers in Canada this year, they're identical. There's absolutely no difference between the flu numbers for those two previous years and what we're seeing this year in Canada. And you know, the government came out and told it was going to be 50,000 to 350,000 people were going to die, Doc. Everybody ran into their houses and hid under couches. What's your thought about all this?
Well, there's always going to be influenza and different strains of influenza. So every year they get a different vaccine for a different influenza virus. And so it's going to be hard. First off, who's going to be the person that says, oh, we've seen our last case of COVID-19? So, I mean, it's going to be impossible for somebody to say, all right, well, this COVID-19 thing has ended. And so I think, and especially since we have cyclic viruses come through every year, it's going to be hard to go back to a non-face mask society. So,
well, I hope that does not happen, Doc, because I will not put on a mask myself, my friend. My body was not designed to breathe in its own carbon dioxide, and there's nobody in the world that's going to convince me to put on a mask, my friend. That's just my feelings about it. I believe my immune system will deal with just about anything that comes along if my immune system's allowed to function properly. And what we see going on right now, we talk about the flu vaccine, Doc, but I went to Northern Health's numbers for 2018 for the effectiveness of the flu virus, the one that they were giving everybody the shot for. Right. In 2018 had an effectiveness of 11%. So they're telling us that if only 11% of the population could possibly benefit from this flu vaccine, yet if you look at the ingredients that are in a flu vaccine, and I've studied it extensively, I don't see a benefit there in any shape or form. So what's going on there, my friend?
Well, to understand vaccines, you have to understand what they are and how they sterilize them. And so vaccines are proteins. So they're just a bunch of amino acids in a long chain. And the proteins, because of the different charges, fold in a different manner. And if we change the order of the amino acids making up the protein, you move the charges around, and the protein actually folds in a different manner. And so these proteins, whenever the body can identify them as a foreign protein, and so that develops an antibody response. Well, protein, so what they do is they make a protein that's similar to the virus, and they make a concentration of this protein, okay? And so they make a whole bunch of these proteins in a little vial, and they got to keep it sterile. And you can't sterilize it by heat sterilization. So if you tried to heat sterilize this protein to kill the bacteria, it would actually cause the protein to coagulate like an egg white, and it wouldn't have immunity after it's changed its shape. It only has immunity in the shape that it's in. If we change the shape, it changes the immunity. So heat sterilization kills vaccine. And that's an important thing that people need to know. And so how do you sterilize something you can't heat? And the answer is you got to put chemicals in there. So they put, all kinds of different chemicals that probably shouldn't be in there. And those chemicals are made to extend the shelf life and make sure that the protein doesn't get contaminated with bacteria before you inject it. So the sterilization process, or lack of being able to steam sterilize or sterilize it with heat, prevents you from forces you to use chemicals, formaldehyde and other things that your body doesn't need.
Yeah, exactly.
People get reactions, not necessarily from the protein. And then there's the issue of many of these proteins, they only offer a short-lived immunity. So if you get a vaccine, it may only last a couple of weeks or more of effect, and then after that it tapers off. And right. So that's why there's such a low protective rate of these things. And it's kind of like chemotherapy too. The doctors in charge of chemotherapy use drugs that have 11% effective rate, and they think that they're helping people. And it's, our medicine society is a lie, just like all the rest of our society. The money is a lie. Justice is a lie. Policing is a lie. News is a lie. Food is a lie. Taxes are lies. Money's a lie. It's just we live in a lying society. And any government that says cannabis is bad, you can't trust them on any other level.
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to, I'm going to add one thought about vaccines, Doc, and what I tell people that you can go on the internet right now, you can punch up every vaccine on the market today, and it'll list the ingredients in those vaccines. And I ask people to cross-reference those ingredients on your computer, and I've done this, and I'll tell you, folks, when you read the effects of those ingredients on the human body, your attitude to injecting it in your body will change, I guarantee you. You must take that time and study the ingredients and what they do to the body, Doc, and I did, and it shocked me. It shocked me. And we're down to about 4 minutes here, Doc. I only got about 2 minutes left with you. I really appreciate you coming in today, sir, and talking with, you know, I'm not a doctor. I've said that many times, and I really love the information you're sharing. My audience has really enjoyed listening to you, and I hope I can get you back here in the near future. You have a couple closing thoughts you'd like to share, Doc, before I have to let you go?
Well, fear anybody that's trying to make you safe, and fear any company making a product, because any company that's making a product cares most about selling the product and getting it off the shelf and getting money in their hands. And what happens to the product after it's off their shelf is your problem, not theirs. And so you got to be careful about people selling talc. You got to be careful about people selling cereal that has glyphosate in it. You got to be careful about all kinds of crazy stuff that companies make products that are not fully tested.
Absolutely. And it's everywhere, Doc. I got to thank you again for coming in, Doc, and I'm going to have to say goodbye. But like I said, I hope I can get you back. Yeah, I hope I can get you back sometime in the near future here. I've really enjoyed the conversation, sir.
All right. God bless. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye for now.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, guys, I'll be back in 3 minutes with Todd McDougall, and I'm really going to have to gear up because Todd is a Duracell Bunny Plus on steroids. Look forward to the conversation. I'll be back in 3 or 4.
Well, thanks again to the doctor for coming in. And if you want to hear more from the doctor, he's on tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific time with Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. And you can find her on Facebook. I'm joined second hour here by a gentleman I haven't had a chance to talk with Todd here for, I think it's about maybe 4 months now since we've had a conversation. And to say things have changed a little bit in Canada since our last conversation, I think would be an understatement. Todd, welcome back to the show and good to have you on.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's always great being on your show, or when you come on mine, it's always an absolutely great whirlwind of a conversation. And I haven't been too busy with Winnipeg Alternative Media the last couple weeks. I kind of took a bit of a break and only did a couple, you know, small little reports. No big like 2 hour long episodes. No guests. No rallies. You know, none of that. Kind of took a little break from that. Did some personal and some family stuff. So yeah, you're kind of catching me coming right off a break right now. So couldn't be any better.
Well, that's good, because we need to do that every once in a while. We really do. Especially, you know, when I find with myself, Todd, that, you know, we're being overwhelmed with a realm of different emotions now. We see this all this stuff going on. It's driving a lot of us absolutely insane. And so society is going insane right now. We're seeing levels of chaos that, you know, I've never seen in Canada before, around the world. But in the same mouthful, I think we were pretty aware that this was coming. It's just a matter of when it was going to happen, and now it seems to be playing out in front of our face. This scandemic that's going on in our society right now is, well, to me, it's driving me insane trying to get through to the sheeple. That just, you know, the CBC, I call them CBC junkies, and what they do, they go home at night and they watch CTV and CBC and Global, and they take that as news. They drink that Kool-Aid. They go to bed, and they do the same thing the next day and the next day after that. I'm having a hard time getting through to those people. I really am. I'm almost, you know, I'm almost losing patience with some of them, Todd, because I, you know, I see what's going on in my country, and I know what kind of a situation we're in, and it makes you wonder why people just can't see the trees for the forest. Are you experiencing the same thing, my friend? These levels of frustration, I feel.
Go ahead. Seen it in two different ways, I guess. You know, living in a major population center such as Winnipeg, you know, there's been a lot more, I guess, availability for me to, and this is one of the things that I kind of almost, you know, had to take a break from, you know, to be out there in the public, you know, using my platform to engage both, you know, on and offline, but then being able to see the reception, say, you know, when out in the public. And there's been some positives to that. Like, some of the rallies that we've had here in Winnipeg over the last handful of months have been really, really exciting and positive to see, where, you know, people aren't there to mess things up. The media has been there. The media has been allowing the public to engage with them and sort of vice versa. And that's always really interesting. And some of those have been really positive, like, you know, not to sound selfish or speak like, you know, as if this is sort of like something that I think is really, you know, changing the world in any one way. But just even the amount of viewers and stuff, you know, that my content has gotten in the last handful of months has certainly spiked up quite a lot. Just because I think, you know, when you have the whole world quickly change so rapidly, and then you throw into the mix all these other things, you know, the whole BLM Antifa stuff, and that got kicked off in a huge way. We saw that rear its ugly head in Canada as well, too. You know, the stuff happening with our government, the stuff happening with the U.S. government. You know, it's a lot. And so there is certainly a section of the population that, whether they were already a little bit before or not, are kind of like leaving the mainstream media, questioning mainstream narratives, taking a look at different talking points, different platforms, different outlets. And that's always a positive thing to see. So I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there as something that I have noticed as certainly a silver lining.
Well, I didn't mean to sound all negative, Todd, because there is people that are really starting to pay attention. It's just that I'm still dealing with a majority of people that are just stuck in the matrix. And to make this thing stop, we're going to have to reach them somehow. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, and that's always such a tough thing to do. Like, doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether it's the current situation with COVID, whether it's talking about just basically how many times mainstream media has been caught totally with their pants down, absolutely lying and not even wanting to apologize for it. Oh, alongside with politicians, same thing. I mean, it can always be difficult to really show somebody that and go, look, this is the truth, this is the reality, this is the world behind the veil. So now do you want to, like, you know, change your mind about a few things? And they still go, no, I think that's your opinion and your perspective on that issue, but not mine still. And yeah, that's always very, very difficult. With so many things happening all at once over the last handful of months, I've kind of just sort of wanted to take more of the perspective of course, you know, I'm not going to go ahead and stress myself out any more than it already has been, being out there in the public and online, putting out content that thousands of people can, you know, can share around and view and everything else, and having the kickback, of course, you know, emails to my employer, you know that your employee is talking about this and attended this rally and doing this and saying this and all that kind of junk. That's already stress enough for someone like me. And so I can mostly what I can only do is just try to keep at it and keep working with the people that do want to work, you know, with someone like myself or yourself, and just keep, you know, having good, healthy conversation where it can be had, and trying not to get too stuck in the mud with, of course, the people that, I mean, not only is it the people, like I just said, it's not only just people that want to say, I disagree with you, I'm going to keep walking my own way. It's people that go, like, I've heard what you said and I find you to be a threat, and I'd like to, like, place some energy in coming to get you, coming to shut you down, coming to stop you. That is much more frightening and much more stressful to me.
Well, we're seeing that come in our society now. You see what's going on in Alberta right now. They're going door to door, enforcing quarantine lockdown orders from the government. The RCMP were doing that last night in Alberta. I don't know if you heard about that or not.
No.
But, I mean, come on, guys. This is, you know, what are we talking about here? I mean, we are absolutely replicating Germany in 1936 right now, to the T. Yeah.
And you'd figure that the Albertan RCMP would have already learned their lesson, because they got tons and tons of bad press. What was it, like 5 or 6 years ago when the Bow River flooded or whatever, and they started going door to door collecting guns for some unknown stupid reason, probably because it was a practice. They already got in for that.
What about the 18-year-old farm boy that was beaten by 5 sheriffs? You know about that story, Todd? Have you followed that one?
Recent, because I just kind of got back from being out on the road and being out in the woods for a good week. So,
let me just give you a little quick highlight on this, because if this doesn't get your blood boiling, folks, I don't know what will get your blood boiling. There's an 18-year-old farm boy working on a tractor in Alberta. You know, the kid wasn't drunk, hadn't been drinking, hadn't been smoking anything. 5 sheriffs came up behind his tractor and opened the door and said, "We want a breathalyzer." And the young boy said, Why am I being asked for a breathalyzer?" When he said that, these 5 sheriffs dragged this 18-year-old boy out of his tractor, 10 feet to the ground, put their knees on his head, beat him, punched him, and threw him in the back of his cruiser, left him there for 2 hours in 100-degree temperatures with no windows open, and then eventually dropped all the charges, impounded the tractor. When they were impounding the tractor, they did $37,000 damage to the transmission by seizing his tractor. And, of course, a couple hours later, they released it. But this happened in Alberta this week, folks. And if that doesn't get your blood boiling, Todd, I don't know what to say. This is all under Justin Trudeau. When Justin Trudeau legalized cannabis, you know it and I know it, everybody was going, yahoo, yahoo, what a great thing. What they didn't realize is that we have now 47 laws in Canada that can put you in jail, as opposed to 7 laws prior to the legalization of cannabis in Canada. People have to realize, Todd, that anything the government ever touches turns to complete poop. And if this doesn't get your blood boiling, folks, I don't know what to say to you. Go ahead.
No, that's just a completely unbelievable and horribly sad story. So the young man Is he okay? Is he still alive?
Yeah, you should see his face. They took a look, picture of his face. They bruised his, they pulled him 10 feet. This tractor's a big tractor, $400,000 tractor top. And they pulled him right from the cab, right to the ground. Five of these goons from Calgary, and they weren't even from his town. They're up there looking. Guys, come on. Canada. If that was your kid, you know what's going to happen? That's going to happen in some place where a farmer sees this going on. He's going to grab the gun out from underneath his seat, and he's going to start shooting. Because this was so, so uncalled for. It's a totalitarian breakdown in our society, Todd. This has got to, this kind of stuff really has got to get people to stand up, Ed, because this got my blood boiling. Boiling. Go ahead.
And so I guess, why can't we turn on the news this evening and catch some clips of the Farm Boy Lives Matter rally?
They didn't even cover it. The mainstream media hasn't even covered this. None of it. None of it hits mainstream. Go to Rebel Media, folks, go to Rebel Media in Canada, punch up their website, go down and look at all the reports on this. It'll get you, like I said, it'll get your blood boiling. Mainstream, they don't even want to talk about it. Todd, what the hell's going on? Go ahead.
And, you know, we got to make sure that the Canadian media is not going to continue on a bit of a skewed sort of misconception on, you know, going, you know, down the whole route that our prime minister wants to take us in. Has been trying as hard as he can for ever since he got in, which is to, you know, teach us that, you know, most of us, especially if we consider ourselves old stock Canadian or we're of European descendant or whatever, that we're, we've had our day in the sun. We need to move out of the way. We're basically bad. We've only been hurting the country and we need to apologize for it. And now that including that whole, you know, shtick of, you know, systemic racism, you know, in every last corner that we look at in the country. Well, I hope that that never becomes a big deal to do with all a bunch of local police officers. And is mostly focused on the Queen's Army, that being the RCMP, because they are absolutely rogue. I'm not going to say that I'm going to blame them for any kind of systemic racism or some bullshit like that, but I'm certainly going to say that if there's any policing organization in this country that needs to be seriously taken a look at or possibly even just disbanded or at least have all their higher ups fired and have completely new people brought in, it's absolutely the RCMP. I don't care too much about the Winnipeg police, the Calgary police, the Edmonton police, the Toronto police, the Montreal police, but when I see what the RCMP are up to and what they usually have happen somewhere between, like, I don't know, 12 to 20 times a year, which includes stories just like the one you just told me. Also weird shooting events like the one in Newfoundland and what was it, 10 years when they helped frame the couple in BC, making them out like they were going to be the ones that put together the whole idea to bring a bomb to the City Hall building on Canada Day of like 2010, 2011. And it was totally all, they were just positioning that couple to be these fall guys. And then they ended up kind of pulling out last minute. I mean, they are rogue. They are
corrupt to the core.
They're not exactly known for all kind of levels of great peacekeeping. And, you know, there's certainly, you know, if our prime minister was really going to take a look at a camera right now and talk to the Canadian people and say, okay, now we do have a problem with our policing and we need to go ahead and clean this up. It better be only talking about the RCMP. Otherwise, you're way off base.
Well, you only got to look at Brenda Leckie and how she was appointed by Justin Trudeau. And then look at her connection to Council of Foreign Relations or attendees at the Bohemian Grove, the Bilderberg meeting. She was an attendee, and you know, her relations to Bill Monroe and blah, blah, blah. What's going on in RCMP? You know, Todd, I play hockey, and one of the guys, I played hockey with this RCMP all winter, and I got to know the guy, and I started expressing some of my concerns to the guy. Well, you know, buddy, he sat down one day, and he said right to my face, you know, he says, I got into the RCMP because I wanted to enforce law in Canada. I wanted to be a good citizen. This guy, you know, I get a feeling that this guy's a genuine man. He's, you know, but he says, you know, this is his words exactly to me, Ted. He said, every member in my detachment are disgusted with what we see going on in the upper level management of the RCMP. You are absolutely correct that they have completely been taken over by our government. We could talk about, Ted, we could talk probably right now about three instances at least that should have our prime minister behind bars right now as we talk. And yet we hear crickets. We are in a full-blown fascist communist dictatorship, my friend. Folks better realize it. Go ahead.
And that's a very, very good point, because I was sort of kind of speaking about, you know, to the story you had told me, speaking about, you know, when they're out there hurting the public and out there basically looking to demonize Canadians and just create a whole bunch of whole kinds of messes. That, yeah, almost the larger issue would be when they're supposed to be safeguarding us away from some corrupt, terrible politician or anybody who's got enough money to, I guess, just pay them off. Then, of course, that doesn't seem to be in their job description anymore. And it doesn't matter how corrupt of anywhere from all the way from a local city hall to provincial government to federal, where the RCMP could step in and be like, you know, we're doing this investigation. We have this amount of evidence. We're taking you to court. We want to see you, you know, indicted for these kinds of things. It's simply just like a foreign language to them. It's not even going to happen.
Oh, we're falling into a police state. Just what happened in Alberta last night. What we're talking about is 1937 German stormtroopers coming to your door. And this is what's going on in our country, folks. Well, you know, they're taking advantage of our liberties in ways that our grandfathers right now are just rolling. They're rolling. We are giving up our freedoms, and people don't realize what's going on around. We're living kind of like a zombie apocalypse. I don't understand. I just don't understand why everyday Canadians, that, you know, we all love our children. You know, you have a newborn in your life. I raised my children. I have grandchildren, and I would die to protect them. We all would. Yet right now, we're giving away freedoms in this country that, buddy, I'm telling you, this has really gotten out of control. It is going at light speed. If we don't put a stop to this, we are going to find ourselves in a real big pickle very, very quickly. I just don't know what to say to people, Todd. I mean, to me, it's the most important thing in my life right now to address this. I mean, I'm 66. You're a fairly young guy. You got lots of years ahead of you. But I look at children, man. I go, wow, what kind of a world are we going to have here in 5 years if we allow this madness to go on? This is what motivates me every day, buddy. I know it motivates you. Go ahead.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, and then it can be tough to find a place to start, right? And, you know, you start with your basic civil liberties and what you want to know and exercise as proper rights, even some of them just being what you would consider basic human rights. And, you know, do we start there, or, you know, the larger ball of wax, which is, you know, sort of like you said yourself, the globalist, communist, well, corporate dictatorship that is, you know, fronted mostly by the United Nations and has spread its tentacles to every last corner of the world, and certainly knows which societies that it hates the most, that being mostly, of course, the more free, supposedly somewhat democratic societies of the West. It's hard to even imagine where to start. Like, where would you start teaching, like, say, you know, a young person who kind of finally has enough of a worldview and a mind to think of, you know, the world beyond their back door? Where would you start? It's difficult. I guess that's certainly going to be something that I'm going to be encountering as a parent, you know, sooner than later.
Yeah.
I guess, of course, first and foremost, the most you can always still do, right? Like I was kind of mentioning earlier about, you know, trying to just kind of, you know, do what you're doing, you know, keep your foot on the gas pedal and, you know, and as much positivity in your heart and mind as you possibly can, and just simply kind of try to your best to lead by example, whatever you can, whether it only influences just your family or a couple people in your community or your workplace around you or whatever. You know, sometimes those things, it's not just because they might be a little easier to pull off because you're not trying to, like, grab a bullhorn and go, like, you know, bang heads. You know, sometimes just even the more worthwhile thing to do, because it comes with a little more, I don't want to say honesty, but it comes with a little more positivity, I guess, because you don't have to be the guy out trying to go, like, look, man, you got to see this. Like, the storm is coming. It's right over the hill. I'm telling you. Trust me. Been there.
Well, we are on the Titanic, you know, Todd, and there's lots of us that are screaming iceberg ahead.
That's right.
Unfortunately, a lot of the sheeple just seem to be below decks and don't want to hear it. So,
yeah, so sometimes all you can really do is just kind of grab people who might seem to know that the iceberg is coming up and put them in a lifeboat and send them off to safety, and then turn around to the others and go, see? And then hope there's a few more coming for the next lifeboat, but you never can tell.
How was your hockey tournament? I don't want to change subjects there, but how was your hockey there? I know you got to play a little bit. Was that on ice or was that on pavement?
Other than getting a couple weeks off of work in the last month and being able to go out in a cabin country and do some camping and go explore a few new places around that I've never really explored much before. Being able to go out and play hockey and, you know, have that camaraderie and, you know, get the let out as well too, is huge. And so I try to say yes to as much of it as I possibly can. And so, yeah, last weekend, I did a little mini tournament with a bunch of great, players, downtown Winnipeg here at a league that I play at all the time. One of the guys that I play with just decided, hey, there's no games going on the Friday, so I'm going to rent the place and just invite as many people want to come out. We'll put together four or six teams and we'll do a little round robin and, you know, see who comes out on top. And that was super fun.
You got to pass the hat around, sign me up for the next one.
That's right. I'd love to. And then the next day I started a big tournament, a big annual tournament that I only played in for my first time last year. It's outdoor. It's probably the biggest ball hockey / street hockey tournament that happens in Winnipeg, I would say. People travel from outside of the city to play in it. And I had a great time. I finally got to play with a team of people that I know. Instead of last year, I joined last minute and was thrown on sort of the team full of scraps. other players that didn't have teams. And so that never really goes all too well. But this time around, it went very well. Had a great team. Got to play in a B-side finals game and lost. So no trophy for me in that tournament this year, but it certainly was a blast. And
they should have pulled the goalie. If people don't know, Todd, me and Todd both play goal. We both have that mental illness where we're diving in front of the puck and people are diving to get out of the way. So we do have a definite bonding there because anybody that plays goal's got something a little bit loose in their brain, so they tell me. So, but it's something I've played all my life, and there's nothing I like doing more than robbing some forward and having him break his stick over my net. You know? There's nothing like that in the world.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's not talk about hockey too much because we'll get going and we'll be telling hockey stories, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, I just wanted to change the subject for a few minutes and lighten it up a little bit, but we really do got to talk about some of the craziness we see going on right now. You know, the government's announcing, though, that we're going to have this second wave, and it's coming, folks, and get ready. And, boy, I'll tell you, I'm very concerned about where we're going forward in light of the response I see from the public to orders from the government, like doing the most tyrannical thing in the world, putting a mask over your face and believing that's going to protect you from a virus that no mask on the market today. And I challenge anybody to prove me wrong on this because I've studied the size of these viruses and there's no mask out there that has any effect on stopping this from getting into your body, bar none. But it sure has a lot of detrimental effects to your body, Todd. And why we can't talk about that on mainstream? Why that's not talked about? They don't talk about the 18 cases of black mold that have showed up in Toronto's hospitals since this mask thing started showing up. They don't talk about that. Or hypoxia, or all the negative effects. They don't talk about that. How come?
Right. And
million-dollar question. How come?
was it something I was just reading just before coming on with you, or was it actually something that your previous guest said? I'm getting a little mixed up here. But I did just either hear or read something that was kind of along the lines of, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did see it online. I don't think it was your podcast. That was saying, you know, one of the reasons why, of course, the mainstream media and no doctors, of course, you know, that one of the most groundbreaking things that's happened in this whole ridiculous pandemic was when those doctors had that little press conference outside in D.C. And how obvious it was that it was to be censored, shut down, and demonized. And that is just like, you know, that would be one thing that I think I would maybe use to show, you know, some younger people or just even some people who are totally just, you know, head in the sand still and go like, look, if literally all mainstream and social media decided that this was evil to have good doctors, like, you know, career doctors putting themselves on the line at a press conference surrounded by mainstream media to start it off with, who then I guess all must have felt really bad for being there because then it was nothing to report on. Like, oh, no, sorry, we got it wrong. We thought those were four doctors that were going to say hide inside for the next year. So I guess they all must have really regretted having them on camera, but they did because these doctors know they're intelligent. They know what to do. So they, you know, pooled their resources together and said, we're going to do our best to get this freaking word out. And to have it so routinely shut down is unbelievable. Such a gigantic smoking gun. And for how this, you know, all these players all work together here. You know, mainstream media, government, social media, the corporate giants there. it's unbelievable how quick and concerted their efforts were. Just boom, you know, that press conference is gone, man. Erased it off the face of the planet. But it had already been picked up enough times, so it's still out there. And with something like that, with those doctors standing there and talking about the obvious effectiveness, the researched and historic effectiveness of the hydrochloroquine, this was the post I had seen today, which was saying, well, you know, the number one reason why, of course, we can't have anybody talking about there being a normal and easily found cure, that being the hydrochloroquine, is because if that was to be known, then Bill Gates and company will not be able to roll out a vaccine or even attempt to make it mandatory. Because if it's going, well, we've already known this for several months and enough people are taking it and it's working, like the doctors said, then that's it. Your vaccine agenda is shut down. It's dead where it stands. So that's why that whole thing got removed, like, instantly. Not because people are trying to save you from looking in a different direction and listening to actual doctors, but no, they're trying to keep the corporate agenda in line, which is that there is a lot of money to be made, and who knows what other kinds of issues, problems, who knows, with rolling out a mandatory vaccine in, like, a worldwide agenda, which is
just, well, that's what they're going to try and pull here, Todd. We know that's what's coming down the pipes. So we really do need to educate people about what's going on, because, like I said, this is the biggest scam ever played. I've looked at the numbers, and I mentioned in the first hour here, Todd, I don't know if you heard me, but I've looked at the numbers for the flu and influenza deaths in Canada for 2018, 2019, and 2020 with COVID-19 deaths. And if you go on to their websites, guys, this isn't something they can hide, but you can actually see the numbers with your own eyes of how many people died. And if you look at the numbers, you'll find out that no more people in Canada have died from COVID-19 at this particular point, at this particular time, as opposed to the influenza virus of 2018 and 2019. COVID-19. And the other thing that people have to, this is the most important thing that people must understand. This puts to rest any argument about what is going on in our society, and it has to get people thinking, is that if you look at the breakdown in the ages, Todd, and I've studied this, and I've studied it, and I've studied it, and the difference in ages are identical as the age groups being affected by this. So in other words, we know under 20, there's not affecting anybody in Canada. Yet now we want to send our kids back to school with masks over their face, guys? Are people really, are they that stupid, Todd? I mean, I'm not a smart guy, but, you know, all you have to do is look at the numbers, and you have to ask yourself, why would they want to do something that especially, and I urge people to do this, to go look at the effects of a hypoxia on a small child while their bodies are developing. We're opening up a can of worms that should never, ever be opened up. But here we're going forward with this, and people are going to accept it, Todd. I'm really scratching my head on that one, brother. Maybe you can help me out with that.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because the last video that I did on Winnipeg Alternative Media included me speaking on that exact topic. Because when I started, I think it was, I guess it was probably last week or when I was still at work, or last weekend when I was out playing hockey, Mandy was just, you know, flipping through news. She's really great for, you know, as my partner in crime with Winnipeg Alternative Media, among other things. She's great for just going through a large span of different news stories and finding me a couple, you know, really good headlines to take a look at. And she had found a bunch that were from all across the country talking about what they want school to look like, you know, in September. And at first, you know, I thought, okay, well, this is going to be what they're saying for, like, the most highly affected area. This is going to be what, like, only happening in Toronto? Or is this not even true? Are these ideas, or is this just, like, people working on different, you know, different ministers of education or different people involved in their provincial governments talking about, you know, oh, we might try this or we might try that? And no. The further I looked in, and you didn't have to look very far, it was basically already being rolled out as a, this is what we're going to have to do. And not just Toronto, not just Montreal, no, anywhere. Like, maybe literally the middle of, like, farm town, population 1,500, Saskatchewan. Like, no, your 75 kids that you have in this community, they're going back to school with the masks on. and they're going to have like plastic sheets around their desks, and they're going to have to like self-isolate when they're going out for recess and stuff like that, where they're going to have to play in groups of five and five only. And I'm going, and what amount of school faculty and staff are going to be out there managing that happen? There's always two parts of that kind of silly nonsense. What I see, well, usually a couple aspects that are quite scary, like, oh, you really are going to want the kids to have to do this in the classroom, wear the masks, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And then there's really silly stuff, like people thinking that they're actually going to have enough staff out there in a school playground to properly distance all the kids. And what are they going to do? They're going to start punishing the ones that, you know, oh man, the group playing soccer in the field has now seven kids playing and not just five anymore. Okay, well, they get detention. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you, like, it just sounds... When you look at the logistics of it, and, you know, thinking that this comes from a group of adults who think that this is their time to shine and they're going to be super helpful, and you just go, man, like, I could be writing that script for a Monty Python episode right now. And that would sound so ridiculous. Like, that, there's still kind of, like, surprising but dark comedy at play with some of that crap. And I just can't help but sometimes laugh a little bit and go, like, really? A group of adults got together and they came up with that? Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Let's think about this for a second, Todd. We're talking about something that has no effect on children at all. The numbers tell us that it has no effect on children. Yet we're going to allow children to wear masks. You know that I've read four studies this week on the effects of isolating children. When I was growing up, Ted, the most important thing was we were able to go out in the schoolyard and we were kids, man. We were allowed to interact. We were allowed to have wrestling matches. We were allowed to chase the girls with snakes. We were allowed to do all that stuff that what made us kids, man. And some of the studies I've read, my friend, and you're well aware of this, Todd, the mental and social destruction this will have on our children will take 4 to 5 years. If we stopped it, it would take 4 to 5 years to correct in a child's brain. What we're doing, Todd, is beyond insanity. So I can't understand. What I don't understand is that a parent is supposed to be the guardian of your child. As that parent, it's your responsibility to look into anything possible that could have a detrimental effect on your child. Well, I say to parents, you only have to go on the internet and Google just Google the search engine, the negative effects of hypoxia on children, and Google that and read some of the studies. And then if you put a mask on your child, I want to come over to your house and have you charged for child abuse. Because it's totally, totally uncalled. If there was some kind of a justification, any kind of a justification that I could see, Todd, like any kind of justification, any kind of evidence that this was actually going to keep our children safer, I would be on board with everybody else and there would be no questions. But I absolutely see no reason, none whatsoever, to do this to a child. We've got to put a stop to this madness, folks. We have to. It's going. Your kids are really going to pay the price. Go ahead, Todd. I get really pissed. Excuse my language. I don't like to even use that word. I try not to swear on the station because we do have a Christian network online here, Todd. So I try not to use any kind of language. But once in a while, folks, if it slips out, I can't help it because that's the way I feel about this. This is insanity. Go ahead, Todd.
I completely, completely agree. And it's something that I've spoken about a few times before as well, too, on my own show. And it's it almost brings me back to one of the last points I just made about it almost being like, you know, a kind of like, you know, you do the old face palm, like, what the heck? And kind of almost feel like there's almost a dark comedy to kind of laugh about. I mean, I've seen plenty of times where, I'm watching families walk around outside or in a store somewhere and the kids got the masks on and the parents don't, or the parents do and the kids don't, or one kid does and one kid doesn't. And I'm just kind of going like, I'd love to sit down and speak with that family for a moment and be like, can you explain what you're doing here to me? Like, cause I'd just like to know what your thought process is of what you're doing. Look really, really kind of tragic. There is something, and I guess that's another thing that, you know, it's probably, you know, I can't I can't reason with. Like, I can't say that I know what somebody is, how somebody else doesn't feel this way or doesn't see it this way. But when I watch like a little, like 5-year-old, 4-year-old, I think the youngest I've seen them with a mask on has probably got to be around 4 and 5. I don't think I've seen like a 2 or 3-year-old with a mask on, thank God. But I've certainly seen 5 and up. And it does just have this, like, never mind, you know, coming from the opinion of, you know, this isn't more dangerous than the seasonal flu. And, you know, anybody under the age of like 20 is going to be perfectly fine. Even if they were to contract something that's like a coronavirus, they're going to get over it. They're, you know, their immune system's going to beat it. They're going to be back out of bed doing what they need to do in like a week tops. You know, even if that weren't the case, it still just looks wrong. Just something weird. And again, especially when you can take a look right at the young parents, and this seems to be almost a common sight. Like, yeah, I don't know, maybe just I can only speak for, you know, Winnipeg here, but where, you know, there's a parent pushing their kids around like a Safeway, and they got the 2 kids in the shopping cart and they're wearing the masks and the parents aren't. And I'm going like, what the heck? You're the parent. What are you doing to your kid? And if youth believes strong in the mask, you're the one apparently breathing in the horrible pandemic air, and you're going to, what, go home and give your kid a kiss and not even question it for a moment? Like, it's so illogical. It's so just way off in la-la land that, yeah, really, I guess, I don't know. You can only just blame it.
Well, you know, go take a look at the mural in the Denver airport about the kids with the masks on. Have you seen that mural?
Yes. Well, what
is it? I mean, that was 90. I mean, that was a long time ago, buddy. You think they knew this was coming?
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Because you got every kid in the world wearing a mask.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a coincidence.
Well, we believe that the air is going to be super dirty. No one's going to be able to breathe the toxic air of, you know, all the horrible people that pollute, blah, 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 blah. Of course, I don't know. Those same people would never tell, you know, China to back off of making every single thing they have in their household, as they're the number one polluter in the world. But no, I'm sure that was all that would be quoted as being a comment on the horrible industry of North America. And so, you know, anyways, yeah. But yeah, just something really weird about looking at children in like masks like that, and just, you know, going around with their family, and, you know, and that's a thing, and oh, they're doing the right thing. And oh, every time to me, it just, my heart just kind of goes out to that kid, and I'm going like, well, I hope at least mom and dad are letting you run around your backyard or local park when you get home after having to go put up with however long you've been stuck in that mask and, you know, dragged around a Safeway, because it looks atrocious.
It does, and it is sad, Todd. And I've been asking myself of a really good opening line that I can approach these parents with when their kids are wearing masks, without offending them, you know, because people have an automatic defense mechanism. If you talk about anything that they don't believe in and you approach them with something completely different to what they're being programmed to believe, it automatically it brings up a defense mechanism. I've asked myself a lot of times how I approach somebody without offending them, because I see it all the time. And it is 1,000% absolutely, folks, not necessary. It really goes to show you the level of mind control that the evil people that hide behind these curtains have over society. You know, we've been programmed now all our lives, Todd, and it's really hard to get people to unlearn what they've been taught. That is one of the biggest problems we have in society. I wish we could put up a sign on, I think we should be able to put up a sign on every child's door in their bedroom saying, never believe what you see or hear unless you've proven it yourself. In other words, everything that we're being told in our world today, Todd, is a lie. Everything. Right from the time we're born, we're lied to. And yeah, it's really hard to break that paradigm in people. It really is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, you go take a look at, and this is a conversation that I always thoroughly love getting into, and I don't get into it enough, I guess, on my own show, you know, when you even go take a look at some of the more easily taught or easily understood or whatever sciences that you would get taught, you know, when you first start learning a little bit about that scientific world around you in grades like 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, all, and then into junior high, and then things really start to get going. And, you know, how many kids love dinosaurs to death and think that we've got it all figured out. We know exactly what those creatures look like. You know, the paleontologists that have been studying that for a long time. I just use this as an example as to how correct you are. Because I try to remind myself about this kind of thing all the time. And then, you know, sadly enough, one great thing that we were all missing, and I don't even know if it gets taught to somebody who is going into a, you know, higher learning, like a university or whatever like that, and they still want to go take a look at prehistoric life. Like, are they even made aware at that stage then? Or do they really just have to go to a library and find it themselves, that there is a ton of history going back from the early 1800s all the way, like right when dinosaur fossils first got found. And basically this is all a comment on corporate science and how you know, money can power. And that the number one book about what I'm talking about right now to you as an example for how, you know, you have to question your entire world around you, and that even basic sciences that you've loved since you were a kid are not what they seem to be. Is the book The Bone Wars, and how the first couple of big groups of paleontologists destroyed each other's work endlessly. They would burn down each other's dig sites. They would steal bones from each other and destroy stuff. They would go find where they were trying to reconstruct a skeleton and go destroy it. You know, all in a bid to try to be the number one that knew the most and was going to get, you know, the big displays at the big museums, because that's where the money is. You know, they were going to get into the universities and start teaching what they had figured, what they had as a conclusion, because that's where the money is. But what actually ended up happening was that all of the first big, you know, finds as, oh, here's what these creatures are going to look like. And then that's what the books all got started off as. So that's what now, if you've been a paleontologist any time in the last 130 years or whatever, 50 years, 150 years, then your decision making and the way that you look at what you're seeing in the dirt is already directed this way. When the first couple of guys that were supposed to really figure out what was going on, totally fought over it, screwed it up, and had a big war over it because they were fighting for jobs and money. So, you know, and so then it's taught to kids is, oh, this is a conclusion. It's already been concluded. You know, the T-Rex looks like this, and that one looks like this, and there's the long neck, and that's the one. That's what they all look like. We know this. And you go, okay. All right, so how many bones in that reconstructed skeleton are real? About 5. Oh, okay, so you just piece the rest together in your imagination? Correct. Okay, and what said that your imagination was correct on that? Well, we've been studying this for 130-odd years. Oh, all right, what about the first guys then that set this whole ball in motion? They didn't have a clue what they were talking about either, but I'm telling you, this is right.
Well, I've got a dinosaur bone right in front of me here right now, Todd, as we talk, so... who knows? There's so much we don't know, but it's pretty cool to have a dinosaur bone that's $65 million in my hand. Yeah. I can actually see the bone marrow in the center of the bone. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, I only kind of say this to use as an example for how corporate science can be, and how when you're taught stuff as a kid, it's always have to go take a look at it as an adult, question everything over again. Is when you finally are a bit older and have a much more of a mind of doing so, you can go and you can use the internet or that wonderful thing called a library card. You can go check out some books that you weren't going to go see in school. Even sometimes, again, even in your higher learning, like university, that no, they focused on what the conclusions are or what they think are their conclusions, but they didn't show you that it was like, oh, but there's actually all these other interesting questions to ask. So, yeah, was there creatures that lived 65 million years ago that must have been some incredibly different and weird creatures? I'm sure. But, you know, what I want to teach my own kid right now, that every single dinosaur book in the library and every single one of their pictures and all the what they say as a conclusion is going to be what my child should think. No, I'd much rather have almost this conversation with them and be like, there are fossils. There are ideas on what these creatures might have looked like. You go from there on your own. What do you think?
Yeah, well, we don't know. We don't have all the answers, but there's lots of evidence as to what existed, you know, eons ago. So we'll never have all the answers, but it'd be pretty cool to have a time machine. I'd go back there for a day as long as I had a couple big guns with me and a couple buddies with me.
Yeah, no doubt.
It'd be cool. It'd be a way to spend a day.
Absolutely. I usually just kind of try to not go too far in the, you know, here's the encyclopedia. I just like to keep my mind open a little more, right? And the same for kids as well, too, right? If you want kids to be able to say, question authority, question their world around them, then don't build them a perfect construct and say, okay, here's what it is. Don't question it and go. Because then they're going to be parents putting masks on their kids.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate in our society today that more people can't homeschool their children, Todd. I mean, we've been set up now in a society that we're taxed to death, and it really takes two parents working all the time just to support a household. Or a lot of situations, it's like that. So they're forced to put their children into the school system. And I say to people, the biggest thing you can do right now for your children, even if it means sacrificing a lot in your life, is to get them out of the school systems. Because the evil that's going on in our school systems, Todd, it drives me insane. It really does. It hits my heart in ways that nothing else that I talk about hits my heart like that, buddy, what's going on with our children. And you know, what can we say that our children are being absolutely destroyed in every which way possible in this world today? If we could talk about their health. We could talk about the vaccine programs. We could talk about the SOGI123 programs, the sexual orientation programs that are just absolutely gender identity. Your kid can be what in British Columbia, a father's fighting in the high courts now because his child at 14 wanted to transform. We have parental rights and they're being taken away from us at light speed right now. And when folks get behind our organizations like Save the Children, a couple websites now in Canada are just growing at light speed because people are becoming aware of what's going on with all this pedophilia and sexual trafficking of children. We've only hit the tip of the iceberg, and it's so evil and so deep and so evil. I don't even want to look at this stuff, Todd, but I force myself to look at it. We have to expose this to the people. We really do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was going to say, you know, if you do have your kids in the public school, the best you could at least do to try to counteract some of the obvious brainwashing occurring in the curriculum would be to, just talk to them about what the teachers are talking about at school. Look at their work, have conversations with them about their work that, you know, maybe gets them to question a little bit of it as well, too, and not just go, the teacher told me to do this, so that's what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, just be a little more personally involved, you know, and wherever there's a chance to kind of say like, oh, well, you know, okay, so that's interesting that you're learning it like this way. But, you know, I've often also heard this and seen this as well, too. And, you know, then you can just have a little conversation with your kid. And especially when the kid's a little bit older, you know, grades 5, 6 and up, then that becomes a little easier. I would, you know, always mention to any parent who's, of course, having their problems with going like, oh man, my kid comes home talking this garbage that I just can't stand. And it's like, well, don't just get mad about it. And if you can't homeschool right away, because of course, like you were talking about how difficult it is to homeschool. Shoot, even if you are a family that gets lucky enough to figure this out and you got a parent that can actually stay home and try some homeschooling for even just a couple years, you get demonized. All of a sudden, you know, you got the people in your neighborhood, people in your community that are going like, oh, why are those kids always at home? Are they being abused? Are they being kept away from the world? Maybe we should call the cops. Maybe we should call CFS. I don't know. I feel weird about this. And that's
we could put it all to an end. We could. If parents took the time to go to school board meetings, inundate the offices, fill those rooms up and demand a stop to this, it would come to a stop. But I hear crickets from the general population. My question is why? Why people are allowing this to go on? Where is the moral fiber in our society? Where is that gone? I mean, it's in our faces, folks, what's going on in the schools. Why aren't we out in droves at the school board meetings and demanding a stop to this madness? Why? What's going on there? What's happened to our society? You know, Todd, if I could go back to maybe 10 or 11 years of age in my life, which was, you know, 50 some odd years ago now. I'm actually 55 years, we'll say. And this was going on in my school right now. The SOGI123 program was going on in my school. And my parents heard about it that day. You would see every parent in the city of Toronto, and I'm probably maybe 50 that wouldn't attend or wouldn't get active. You'd see every one of those parents storming the school board's offices and wanting to hang the people that are doing this. But what's happened to our society in the last 40, 50 years? Well, along came all the new things. And slowly but surely, inch by inch, they brought this absolute insanity into our school system. People don't realize that our society was built on values, Judeo Christian values. That's what made our society what it is, and they've been completely taken away. And henceforth, we see what's going on with our children right now. It's absolutely disgusting. Go ahead.
Yeah. Of course, again, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. I'm glad to hear you say something that I haven't said again in the last little while, I guess, but I used to say a lot more frequently. Which is, get on the school boards. you need to attend some of these meetings. You need to be able to voice an opinion as well, too. If you know you have other parents that, you know, have their kids attending that same school, and you know that your school or your school district is making, you know, certain motions towards certain things that, you know, yourself and others would absolutely need to have a conversation about, or even just outright stand against it, then you need to be trying to make some of those things happen. And yeah, in fact, that's probably going to be something that I'll be doing with all these new things rolling out for this next school year. And my me and Mandy's oldest, who's going into grade five now, with all the new COVID things, I think I'm probably going to want to be on the school board this year and hear these conversations and be able to have some input.
Yeah, absolutely. My granddaughter is about to go into the school system, and I'll guarantee you I'm going to be at school board meetings, and I'm going to be listening to what's being said, folks. We need to do that, because what they're doing to our children, Todd, they're destroying the moral fiber of our society. We're creating children that will have no moral balance in their lives going forward. If we do that to our society, folks, it's inevitable that our society will fall apart. We can look at examples in history where the exact same thing has happened, and that society has always fallen apart. We are in uncharted territory right now, Todd. We really are. And I enjoy these conversations with you because, you know, we get into some good heart to hearts, but we really do need to talk with our hearts right now, buddy, because we are in a pile of poop. I see stuff coming for our children that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And again, I keep banging my head against the wall some days wondering why the general population still ain't getting it. But all we can do at this point is just keep our foot on the gas, and there'll be people that'll hear us, Ted, and unfortunately millions won't.
This is very true. Yeah. But really, without completely losing our minds and losing ourselves in the chaos, that's about the best thing that we can do right now is, you know, just try to, again, lead by example, hopefully be that positive beacon for people that are, you know, that are close and around you, and keep your foot on the gas, and, you know, don't get too stuck, don't get too angry, don't get too carried away, and keep moving. If you know you're moving in the right direction and it feels good for you, it feels positive, you know that it has, if you have people around you that have reacted to it in a positive way, like, yeah, you know what, I totally agree. You know, I want to hear more of what you have to say, because that last couple bits of whatever you told me, I ended up looking into it, and I feel really strongly about that now as well, too. Well, then there you go. So, you know, you've got some sort of, you know, you got things positive, like, you know, that are coming back your way as well, too. There's some reciprocation. And once you got, once you have some of that going, I'd say you just keep working with it.
Absolutely.
And try to spread it out as well, too, where it's, of course, especially, you know, like we're talking about the school board thing. That's an area where that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's like that's not a responsibility that you just want a few other parents to have just because, oh, they're the do-gooders. They're on the board at everything. You know, they coach five different sports teams and do this work and that work and this. No. That's supposed to be offered there for every and all parent. You know, that's supposed to be not something that you just kind of go like, oh, they already have 10 people on the school board. Oh, that seems like enough. Okay, good. No, unless you know those people and you feel really good with what they would bring to the table. But no, that's an easily afforded option to be able to spark some sort of positive change right, you know, close to home for yourself. That is an option that is afforded to you. You don't have to go fight to make it a thing. You don't got to go bang your head on the wall to go create that. That's there. That's offered. It's supposed to be used. So things like that, especially, use them.
There really isn't a time to fool around right now. You know, one of the things that we can really do in our society to make a change, folks, is to take the power back at a municipal level. And I get a friend on, Ron Stevens, and lots of people love Ron. They've heard him talk lots of times on my shows. But, you know, what he says to me really, really makes sense because, you know, the governments aren't going to listen to us. But if we take the power back at a municipal level, we can totally throw a wrench into what the government's trying to do. We can stop all these agendas. One of the examples he gave me, Todd, real quick, I'll tell you about this, is a community in Northern Ontario. They've only got 6 members on the council. four of those members are totally against any UN development, blah, blah, blah. So the mayor, of course, is trying to bring in all these changes, and of course they just vote it right down. The mayor is pulling his hair out. He can't implement any of the agenda that he's being directed to do by the Council of Mayors, and we know they work with the government, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but they're putting a stop to everything this mayor is doing, and it's driving him nuts, and he's laughing about it. But we can do the exact same thing in our communities. If you want to really make change, get involved in your local councils and take them over. Because the people that are getting in there are implementing an agenda that is not beneficial to our country, guys, period. Yep. And we've got about 4 minutes left here. So I'm going to let you share some thoughts here for the last couple of minutes, and I'll have to shut the show for the week.
For sure. You know, and I was just going to add to that point that you were just making there, Barry. You know, even if, you know, for whatever reason, you know, you work out of town a lot, you're really busy, you got like five kids or whatever, it might be. If you have a really busy personal life and, you know, and you feel like you don't have the necessary amount of time and energy to put into getting involved in, you know, civic local politics, even the school board situation, all that kind of thing, then the one thing that you could do that might make it just a little easier for yourself, and that could, you could still, you know, make yourself feel better, have a better understanding of what's going on, and possibly, you know, create some type of influence, is just get to know somebody that is then. You know, if you know one of your neighbors or whatever that is on the school board, well, next time you're having a little chat about the weather, maybe pop that question up as well, too. Like, hey, what are the school boards talking about right now? What do you guys, like, I heard that this and this is kind of coming into the curriculum for these age groups, and I'm kind of curious about that. What do you know? You know, get them talking and get them thinking. Same thing too with a local city councilor or something like that. You know them as best you can. When you have a chance to have a conversation with them, when there's some sort of little town hall meeting or something like that, go to it and hear what they have to say. And if something that's not being said, you're there, like, you know, if you're in a group of 50 people and you were there specifically to ask this question or hear them talk on this, and no one else is going to ask it, and the meeting's about to end and you're all going to go home and you're not going to get to find out what you were there to find out, then stand your butt up and go ask them, and or even meet them afterwards and be like, hey, you know, didn't want to interrupt because you were doing your thing and, you know, everybody else had a bunch of other things to talk about, but go find them or go to their office the following day or make a phone call and just don't just sit with it and don't, you know, like I was just saying, there's these still enough easily afforded options to be able to try to get involved at the ground level, at the local level, where things really, really, really have to start to change, where change can really just actually occur and matter and make a difference. That story that you just mentioned about that Ontario community is gorgeous. I would love to interview somebody from that whole situation. I think that's beautiful.
I can make that happen.
Well, that would be awesome. I'd love to talk to anybody from that. You know, that's just one thing that you can do that that might also make you feel a little bit better when you're going to when you're going to bed at night as well, too. Knowing that you took those steps, you're a little more involved in the community level. You're not just out there yelling and screaming at people. You're not causing a scene or causing a stir. You're being proactive, responsible, positive. You know, if a few other people happen to kind of get in your way, or they don't, when I don't know, you stand up at the town hall meeting and they think you're a right-wing conspiracy, blah, 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 nut or whatever like that, I would say don't even pay them any mind. Just keep looking straight ahead. Talk to the guy that you were there to talk to. Do what you got to do and carry on about your business. Somebody who's going to throw a wrench into something like that. It's there to use. Use it. Be proactive. Use it.
Well, thanks, Todd. I'm going to have to thank you for coming in this week. I've enjoyed the conversation. I look forward to another one in the very near future, and I'm going to have to let you go, so thanks again. And folks, that's the end of the show for this week. I really enjoyed having the doctor on the first hour, and I promise I'll get him back real soon, and I'll get Todd back in here, because it seems like we get into some very good conversation. I've enjoyed this last hour immensely, Todd, so thanks again.
Thank you very much. Again, Barry, it's been a pleasure as always. And, you know, like I usually like to say to a guest after a great 1 hour conversation like we just had, absolutely, you know, I'll come back on anytime, and I'll have you on my show anytime as well, too. So let's do the little trade ski and get you on my platform for a good conversation as well.
Always open to a good conversation. Okay, thanks, Todd. Okay, folks, I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks to Steve Roberts for producing my show and putting up with me every week. Thanks for tuning in and lending us an ear. I hope that some of the things we said today have made some sense and maybe had a little bit of influence in the way you see things going on in this crazy world we're in right now. God bless you all. Have a great week. I'll be back next week, same time. Bye for now.
You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.
Now you do what they told you.